From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today marks the start of what's called Hunger Action Month. It was started in 2008 by Feeding America with the hopes of raising awareness about hunger and food insecurity and what to do about it. According to Feeding America, more than a million people just in Illinois face hunger. Of those, more than 300,000 are children. The pandemic and more recently inflation have intensified those problems. More U.S. households have turned to food banks, food pantries, and other sources to meet their needs. NPR's Jennifer Ludden spoke with the head of Feeding America, Katie Fitzgerald, for a story that aired back in June. Fitzgerald said persistent hunger is an indicator of ongoing inequality.
You know, 30, 40 years ago, it was really an emergency food system for people who really had no other option. And today, we're seeing a lot of folks that are kind of budgeting in charitable food into their monthly budget. And when that is happening in this country, something is fundamentally wrong because a lot of these folks are working.
The Biden administration has set a goal of ending hunger in the United States by the year 2030. Later this month, it'll be hosting a conference on hunger, nutrition, and health, the first of its kind since the Nixon administration more than 50 years ago. Here to talk about the effects of hunger and how society is dealing with it is Diane Doherty. She's the executive director of Illinois Hunger Coalition. Diane, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us.
We are also joined by several regional food banks for this conversation. Chris Ford is the food sourcing manager for River Bend Food Bank, which serves the northwest part of Illinois. Chris, thank you for joining us.
Brian, thanks for having us. Welcome. Great to be aboard.
And Amanda Borden is also with us. She's vice president of development for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank based in Urbana. Amanda, glad to have you here as well.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And finally, last, certainly not least, is Ruth Ann Evans. She is a volunteer and board member of the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, which provides meals in the Champaign area. Ruth Ann, welcome to you.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
And listeners, as ever, we invite you to join us, especially if the pandemic and inflation have affected how you get your food, or maybe you volunteer with a food bank or some other related program. What are you seeing out there? 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. 800-222-9455. So, Dan, I want to begin with you. What does hunger look like today?
So hunger looks like, and it has gradually evolved over the years. The Hunger Coalition was started as the first and only statewide anti-hunger organization in 1988. And I think that we've come to realize over the decades that hunger can happen to anyone. Unforeseen circumstances might happen. Someone loses a job. Someone becomes ill, and the coverage that they have for health insurance is tied to a job, and they can't work because they're sick and they don't have health insurance. So we have over the years looked at that, but one of the persistent, pervasive things that we've always realized is that communities of color, low-income communities of color, are disproportionately impacted by hunger and poverty because it's a twin crisis. And so we've been aware that this is the case, and then we know now there's more data as a result of COVID having a pandemic, where we know that for communities with predominantly Black residents, Latinx residents, and certainly some immigrant and refugees, they are twice as likely to suffer from food insecurity than other communities. And these are communities that have been historically disinvested related to racism. The one bright light, or maybe one of a couple bright lights in COVID, has been to actually bring that to the surface in a way that it hasn't been before. And I think efforts to address it need to be even more intense and ongoing.
Yeah, and we can talk about some of those efforts, but so that's the macro picture. Ruth Ann, I want to ask you sort of on an individual human level, how does hunger affect people? How do you, what do you see?
Well, what we see at the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen is that our numbers, we had in dining, and we were serving about 200 meals a day. And then, of course, when the governor and the state shut down in March of 2020, we have people eating in our dining room and around 200 meals, hot meals. We serve a hot nutritional meal every day of the week. We're open 10:30 to 12:30. But we served on a Sunday that Monday, and with public health, Champaign-Urbana Public Health helped us, we started carry out services. So over the time, what we have seen is an increase. You know, when the schools closed, kids didn't have access to those hot meals, the food at school. Some of the schools were giving out food, but that is more difficult. You know, I don't think people always realize the transportation issues for poor families to get to the schools to get the food. And so we're located downtown Champaign on First Street across from the police station. We were seeing more and more kids and families coming. And this has been pervasive over time that we've gotten more numbers.
Okay. So what about, Amanda, let me bring you into the conversation now. Maybe you can just talk a little bit about the role that food banks serve in their communities, and especially how that role has evolved over time.
Yes. Yeah, so Eastern Illinois Food Bank, we serve 18 counties throughout East Central Illinois, and we serve more than a million people a year. And I would say that one of the things that we have, you know, one of the ways that we've evolved is that we know that approaching hunger is, we really have to take a holistic approach. So our mission is to alleviate hunger. And part of that, you know, involves removing the stigma around food insecurity and for people to be comfortable to ask for help when they need it. Because if we're here and we're providing services, but people don't want to reach out and get help for whatever reason, then we're not fulfilling our mission to alleviate hunger. So one of the things that we've really been intentional on is trying really hard to alleviate that stigma so that people will feel comfortable coming and getting the services that they need.
And has the role, we heard that NPR clip about how food banks were sort of an emergency resource. Now they've kind of become more ingrained. Is that something you're seeing among the people who take advantage of your services?
You know, I think it's probably both. I think that, you know, like Diane mentioned, I think there's a lot of different circumstances that lead people to hunger. Some of those circumstances are temporary and some are more long-term. I know that certainly lately we've seen a lot of people who have sought out our services for their first time in their lives. I actually just spoke to a lady a couple weeks ago at a distribution who had never sought emergency food assistance ever before. She's on a fixed income and she's retired, and the rising grocery prices were just too expensive for her. They just put too much of a strain on her budget. So I do think that there is a lot of different circumstances that lead to people seeking out emergency food.
And maybe that's actually a way in to ask. Let me pause on that. Chris, I want to bring you into the conversation. Let's talk about what actually the work of a food bank is. What goes into making sure that a food bank actually has food to distribute?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we actually have three different sources of food. The largest typically being donated food from either retailers or grocery manufacturers, food manufacturers. The federal government provides, you know, anywhere between 20 to 30% for us. And then we actually go out and purchase a decent percentage ourselves. What we've really found in the last 2 or 3 years is that the donated food from retailers and manufacturers has shrunk considerably. You know, to look at numbers, typically that was a 60% number. Just last month, we were down in the mid-30s to 40%, just because retailers and manufacturers are still suffering some supply chain issues. And they're certainly doing a better job now of recovering food themselves. Typically something that broke open in a store, they would automatically send to us. Well, they're trying to repurpose that now because they're having problems getting food too. So what all that says to the food bank is it's really challenged us to find more financial support to go out and purchase product ourselves. Just last month, we purchased almost 60% more product than we have in the past.
I heard somebody saying, yeah, in there. Does somebody want to amplify that? All right, maybe well, not. All right,
That may have been me at the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, but we are finding the same thing. The donations we get from food, from restaurants, from grocery stores, we still are receiving. And the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, we couldn't exist without them. Someone from our organization goes there every day. But we are seeing less if the stores are trying to repurpose their products.
Oh, interesting. All right. Ruth Ann, let me ask you another aspect of what we've been talking about. What do people who are not and maybe have never been food insecure, what do they misunderstand about the people who are?
What do they misunderstand? Well, how?
Yeah, what are some misconceptions? Yeah, go ahead.
How easily it can happen. In Champaign-Urbana, in this surrounding area of Champaign County has about a 23% poverty rate. And about 1 in 7 adults, 1 in 5 children suffer from food inadequacy. Now, this is data that we collected over time. But I think what is missing is how easily this can happen when you have a job that is just paying the bills and you lose that job, or in the pandemic, you were in restaurant or other industries that closed. You didn't have the income coming in that you used to have, and how difficult it is. And we see so many women with children. We try to give out some fruit and vegetables when we have extra, and it's so expensive at the grocery store. And I think if you've had a steady income all your life, you don't realize how quickly this can happen.
Diane, I want to come back to you and just talk a little bit more about the work of the Illinois Hunger Coalition. Your organization's website talks about working to end hunger and address the underlying causes by working for a deeper and more transformative approach to economic and racial justice. What does that look like in practice?
So one of the things that we believe strongly in, we don't believe that we can solve everything by ourselves. We believe in collaboration. And so what we try to do is we are statewide. Our headquarters are here in Chicago. Southern Illinois our Southern Illinois office covers some of the most rural counties in the state of Illinois. And there's a lot of differences between the communities that our Southern office serves and ours up here. But what we have in common and what our goal is to collaborate with everyone who's part of the solution. So that includes health clinics. That includes even in terms of addressing the issue that I mentioned earlier about communities of color, particularly in some of the immigrant communities and people with limited English proficiency. Some of the convenings that we do, we try to connect them with some of the major federal nutrition programs, federally funded USDA programs like the SNAP program. So around the Department of Human Services, where 2 million people in Illinois get their SNAP and medical benefits, we were up to COVID. We're convening regular meetings, and we would have doulas who work with, particularly in the Latinx community, who work with pregnant women and new moms, to make sure that they have the nutrition and health that they need in order to raise healthy kids. We have hospitals, we have schools, we have special ed services, and of course, all of the usual suspects that work in human services, the major community organizations and the major agencies across the state are at the table with us to work with the government-funded programs. We know one of the most important programs, and I think it was Amanda, if I'm not mistaken, mentioned school meals. I mean, the school meals program is one of the most important programs for kids. I mean, there is decades of research that proves that the impact of giving kids meals at schools that are healthy results in lifetime behaviors of eating the proper nutrition, the proper proportions, And the school meals programs generate more than two times the return on the investment. The SNAP program, the same thing. Every dollar in SNAP benefits turns into about $1.30, $1.40 in local communities, disinvested low-income communities. Sure. So our staff, we also operate a 1-800 hunger hotline where we help folks get the services that they need. We do regular applications. We do applications for the SNAP program. We put them in touch with their school meals programs and their summer feeding programs because hunger is a year-round problem.
Yeah, sure. All right. I'm sorry to interrupt. We do need to take a break, and I do want to invite our listeners to join us in this conversation one more time at 800-222-9455, especially if you are someone who has faced food insecurity in the past, or maybe you're just someone who sees the rising price of food, and that's putting a strain on your budget. We'd love to hear from you. 800-222-9455. Maybe you've worked with a food bank or another program. What are you seeing out there? 800-222-9455. More in this conversation when we return. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about hunger, food insecurity. We've seen both of those things increase during the pandemic. And then, of course, inflation has had a big effect on that as well. We're talking about this with people who work in this area all over Illinois. Diane Doherty is the executive director of the Illinois Hunger Coalition. Amanda Borden is with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank based in Urbana. Chris Ford works with the River Bend Food Bank in Northwest Illinois. And Ruth Ann Evans is with the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen in Champaign, Illinois. And Amanda, let me ask you about the stigma around hunger, the stigma around seeking help in the first place. How does your group help people deal with that, maybe overcome that?
Yeah, so like I mentioned before, we really like to take a holistic approach to fighting hunger. And we know that hunger is an issue that affects so many people in the community, and therefore it requires a community approach to solving. And so in order to do that, we like to use messaging. You know, we like to say neighbor. You know, we like to call people neighbors instead of people who are hungry. We like to say people who are facing hunger, because we like to recognize that hunger is not something that defines somebody. It's just a situation that they're facing at that moment.
Is there a difference between hunger and food insecurity? I've noticed, like, it, you know, activists often change their language around things with people who work in the area of what we used to say homelessness. Now they refer to unhoused people. Is there a difference sort of in the community between hunger and food insecurity?
Well, I like to use the word food insecurity. I think that it is more accurate for what people are facing. When you think of hunger, you often think of the physical feeling of being hungry, whereas food insecurity, I think, is more not having access to the food and the nutrients that you need to live a healthy lifestyle. So maybe you're not physically feeling hunger necessarily, but you may not have access to the food that you need to thrive.
Interesting. Okay. Chris, I want to talk a little bit about inflation, because that's obviously been a big concern for a lot of Americans this year. What effect is inflation? We talked a little bit about supply chain stuff earlier. What is inflation? How is that affecting the work of food banks in particular, and, you know, efforts to deal with hunger or food insecurity?
Yeah, inflation has certainly been an issue on both sides. So as prices go up, that drives demand into our food banks and into our partners that we work with. But also, I think what a lot of people don't understand is, as I mentioned before, we purchase, a large amount of the food that we give out. And so we're susceptible to those increased prices too. So not only does it drive it up on the consumer side, but certainly the food that we go out and try to find, that cost is certainly more substantial now too.
Chris, what is your sort of forecasting process look like? How do you gauge, you know, how do you make sure you have enough food on hand to meet what you expect demand will be, you know, a month, 2 months, however many months out you're working?
Yeah, so we have a yearly budget of food that we want to purchase. And then obviously, as we said before, we combine that with food that we receive from the federal government and donations. So we kind of have a number in mind we project out each month. And then we subsidize our purchases for whatever we do not get through donation or the federal government side. We try to forecast and go out and purchase to meet that total demand.
Interesting. So, Amanda, I don't know if you have a perspective on that, and maybe just, you know, the way that how has demand changed this year in particular, right? I mean, we saw one step up with the pandemic. A lot of, you know, there were new stories, people in lines getting food who had never experienced that before. Are you seeing the same thing now with inflation?
Most certainly we are. In the last few months, we've seen a pretty significant increase in the number of people seeking our services, and at times as high as 30% higher. And we do expect that to continue to rise.
Okay. Ruth Ann, I want to ask you this sort of a similar question on the ground level at the soup kitchen. Are you seeing anything different this year because of inflation as opposed to the past, you know, what you've seen in the past couple of years during the pandemic?
Well, what we've seen during the pandemic, and of course, I believe inflation is part of that, is we are seeing more people and we're giving out more meals. And of course, our costs, we're a nonprofit, non-denominational organization. We depend on the generosity of the Champaign-Urbana community. And as I mentioned, the Eastern Illinois Food Bank and our donors in the grocery stores. And people have been very generous to us, but of course our expenses have gone up. I do believe over the summer and through the pandemic, we've seen more children. We are seeing more immigrants in our community. We're giving out more meals. And of course, we're grateful to have the support of the community to be able to do this, to serve our community.
Diane, I want to go big picture again with you. And so how does the work of food banks, like some of the representatives we've been talking to, groups like the Hunger Coalition, how does that tie in with other programs that deal with food insecurity? You mentioned the school meals earlier, for example.
Exactly. So the school meals program, so for the last over 2 years, families could go to their schools and they could get, some of them were getting three meals a day that the caretaker could go and pick up the parent, or in some schools, the child, and bring home. And families have been over the moon. They have been so happy about that because, you know, through our hunger hotline, we get people of all ages. I mean, we have people in their 90s and we have younger people as well. Through our outreach in the community colleges and in colleges and around the state, where we do outreach and enrollment, there's a lack of predictability. And so you brought up an important issue, inflation. So not knowing what's going to happen, obviously what happened with gas prices and food prices, and now what's happening with the rental market, people are just terrified about how they're going to make ends meet. So the school meals for these years, the parents did not have to fill out applications. All the kids could come and get the meals. And people have been so excited about it and appreciative of it. Well, because it didn't get through Congress the end of July, those meals are no longer being provided for free. So we are trying to get the word out to let people know that they've got to fill out an application to get free or reduced price meals, because otherwise they're not going to get those meals. And it's also bigger picture is that we would like Illinois to join at least five other states in providing universal free meals to all kids in the schools in Illinois. And we would bring in, as I mentioned, the school meal program administered by USDA results in $40 billion in economic in health and economic benefits. So we want Illinois to do that. So that all kids, what families experienced during COVID, which was a lifesaver, that all kids continue to get that, because it's called the public health emergency. When the public health emergency goes away, then these programs that have pumped billions of dollars into states with federal money, that's going to dry up and those programs are going to go away. So families were getting what's called pandemic electronic benefit transfer. So children 5 years and younger, child care age kids, there's also a summer PEBT, and we're waiting for Illinois' plan for the new school year pandemic EBT. What those are SNAP benefits that is on a card that goes to the kids. So it acknowledges that when school is closed, like it was closed during the pandemic, when school is closed during the summer, that those families have access to these free meals. And then moving forward, we want to make sure that if through the passage of state legislation, that we're able to get universal meals. And then on the federal front, there's Healthy Meals, Healthy Kids Act, which is a great piece of legislation that the members of Congress from Illinois and elsewhere are going back to D.C. And this is a bill that would provide more funding to the state of Illinois to be able to provide meals, to provide through the WIC program support for pregnant women, breastfeeding moms and children. It would be up to age 6 instead of 5, with not only nutrition benefits, but with health benefits. So we need this comprehensive legislation. We need it at the federal level. Senator Durbin is on the Senate Ag Committee. He's been amazing. He's been a leader for so many decades on nutrition programs and a whole host of other programs, including jobs and immigration, that we need to reach out to him and say, tell him Healthy Meals, Healthy Kids Act. We need to get that passed. And just when, you know, to go back to what you were talking about with the inflation, it's not one of our largest school districts by any stretch of the imagination, but the South Beloit school district, which now has less than 1,000 kids because they've been losing enrollment over the years, which is true for many schools. But just their bread and milk vendors, their increase this year over last school years was between 21.3% and 22.5%. So last year, the last time that they experienced an increase, it was only 3%. So the amount of money that these schools are going to lose unless this Healthy Free Healthy Meals Act passes, excuse me, in D.C., and we can get something on the books in Illinois this year, there are going to be a lot of kids who are going to miss school meals. And what does that mean? That means these kids are not going to be able to succeed in school the way we know that they can. There are decades of research that show that kids cannot learn on an empty stomach. And then the final thing is you brought up stigma, which I'm happy about. When kids have to fill out a free and reduced price meal application and it's there and they're being asked, their family's being asked to fill it out, there's stigma attached to that. Mm-hmm. Some of the states have what's called lunch shaming, where they write on a kid's wrist their number when they go through the line so they don't give a free meal to any kid whose parents. There's some schools where children are not allowed to graduate or go to prom, or they can go to graduation, but they can't wear a cap and gown. So we don't want anything that happens like that where children get punished because their parents are low income, because their parents suffer from hunger or food security, whatever we want to call it. Children should not be victimized by this.
Yeah. Let me just take one more opportunity to reintroduce our conversation. We're speaking with Diane Doherty of the Illinois Hunger Coalition, Chris Ford with the Riverbend Food Bank, Amanda Borden with Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and Ruth Ann Evans with the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen. And I want to get a caller in at 800-222-9455. Paul is on line one from Urbana. Paul, thank you for calling in.
First off, I'd like to say, well said. That was amazing. I wanted to ask about the Sola Gratia truck farm, whether you have anything on that. I understand they got a $100,000 grant from the USDA. I don't know what program that is, but I think that's a great thing. And bringing good food and fresh food to the food banks is just such an admirable project. Just as a digression for a moment, though.
Well, yeah, Paul, I'm sorry, Paul. We're almost out of time, so I'm going to say thank you and hold off on the digression for another day. Chris, what about that? I don't know if you can comment on that specific program, but farm to pantry. How does are farms part of this process now more? Is that changed over the years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think food banks looking to farmers or vice versa has really become an important thing, at least in the last couple of years. There are some programs in the state of Illinois, Farm to Food Bank, where Feeding Illinois, Steve Erickson, the director there, is connecting farmers throughout the state of Illinois with Illinois food banks and kind of connecting them with some grant money to begin the process of developing a relationship where we can purchase food directly from farmers. And again, the emphasis there would be fresh, healthy food that's made available to us.
And there's also farm to school, Brian, to throw that in. And that's, there would be more money, federal money for that. If this legislation passed, that will be brought up in September. So that farm to school is another great program where kids are eating healthy, locally grown fresh fruits and vegetables.
Amanda, how do you make sure that people, that institutions are aware of the need, are aware of the opportunities if they are in need? How do you get the word out?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, there's a lot of ways that you can get the word out. You know, we always encourage people to go to our website, which for Eastern Illinois Food Bank is www.eifoodbank.org. We do list all of our partners, including Ruth Ann at Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, who's one of our partners. And that's one of the places that people can go for information. Also, if they go to social media, they can find information there as well.
And what, Amanda, maybe we're coming to the end of our time. How do you make sure that addressing hunger goes beyond this moment we're in, right? I think there's been a lot of attention to it because of the pandemic, because of inflation. How do you sustain this over the long term?
Yeah, I think that just having conversations like this is so valuable to educate the public on, you know, really the challenges that that people in our community are facing, you know, and that people don't forget that, you know, the things that are happening now are going to be, you know, affecting a lot of families and a lot of people in our area for a long time.
All right. I want to thank my guests. They've been Amanda Borden with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, Ruth Ann Evans with the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen. Both of those are in the Champaign-Urbana area. Chris Ford is the sourcing manager for the River Bend Food Bank in northwestern Illinois. And Diane Doherty is executive director of the Illinois Hunger Coalition. Diane and Chris and Amanda and Ruth Ann, thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. Coming up after a short break, my colleague Brian Moline spoke recently with the musician Jerry Douglas. You might not have heard of him, but you've probably heard him playing. He's been a longtime member of Alison Krauss's band. That conversation is coming up after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Do stay with us.